Stand by. Is this thing on?
Yes, Dan.
Oh, hello.
You're listening to Old News with Dan and Carrie.
This just in.
Breaking news to report.
We are live.
Old newscasters reunite.
Can we just say former?
Sure. Former newscasters reunite behind the mic after more than 20 years.
Old news is good news.
Stay tuned.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Old News with Dan and Carrie, or Carrie and Dan, however you want to say it. Carrie is over there, and I'm right here. I'm Dan.
Hello. She's Carrie. I'm Carrie.
And, you know, I've torn myself away from watching Gilmore Girls for a whole month now, Carrie.
And are you okay? Should I send snacks? Any comfort foods?
You know, no, I think I've eaten popcorn more than I ever needed to eat popcorn. And then we watched the reboot, too, my wife and I. And I was telling you, it has this big theater segment on it. And you know me, my passion is theater.
Yes, mine as well. But you are really doing it. You're in two shows.
I'm doing two shows right now. This is the year of Dan in theater. So I'm doing Barefoot in the Park, which opens here in Sun Prairie. Sun Prairie Civic Theater, we're doing that the first two weekends of February. And then in March, I'm doing, it's called, what are we calling it? It takes a village.
Oh, I was going to say it's a review, right? So it's a.
It is. It's called It Takes a Village, and that's in Stoughton, which is south of Madison, if folks don't know the Madison area. And that's kind of a review, and I'm singing You Got Trouble.
Can you give us a sample? There's going to be trouble.
Well, you got trouble, my friend. Right here, you got trouble right here in River City. Well, sure, I'm a billiard player. Certainly mighty proud to say I'm always mighty proud to say it.
Now, how on earth are you memorizing that? I would have to get out note cards.
Well, you know what? It's, you know, music or like that kind of stuff is a lot easier to memorize than script, I think, just because there's a rhythm and there's that kind of stuff. And as I'm aging, I'm really trying to work my brain a little bit, Carrie, you know, because
I hear you.
Even though it's still a lot easier to use a prompter. I wish I had a prompter all the time.
I do love a good old teleprompter.
I know.
Well, that's yoga is keeping my brain young, I think, is because I do pre-choreographed programs as well as regular yoga classes. And so as a teacher, it's like, I feel like, okay, I don't have to do a crossword because I've gotten all this choreography out. So I hear you.
And so for yoga, you don't have to wear like a headset. Like you used to do that kind of thing, didn't you? Where you had a headset on and you had to talk to people out in your workout group or no?
Yes, I do that. Like you today. Do that. Yes. Yeah.
The Britney Spears.
Not like this, but yeah, I have my Madonna microphone on so 20 people can hear me in the room over the music. But that's fun.
Awesome. They should just give you a prompter, you know, because
that'd be so nice.
You could be running it yourself too with a foot pedal or a hand, you know, just like the old news days.
That's what we had to do when we got to run our own teleprompter.
Well, and speaking of old news, we were lucky enough this week to talk to somebody we actually worked with back in the day at Channel 27 in Madison, Wisconsin at WPOW, right?
Right. Rena Sargentopoulos is joining us. So let's get to it. Once again, we have the great pleasure of having someone on this podcast who is anything but old news. Our guest today is Rena Sargentopoulos, a news anchor and reporter from Care 11 TV in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Dan and I worked with Rena at WKOW TV in Madison, Wisconsin in the late 1990s. After that, Rena worked in Milwaukee as an anchor and reporter before moving on to Minneapolis. Rena has won many awards for her work, including regional Emmys and a National Edward R. Murrow Award for Hard News Reporting. Rena Sargentopoulos, welcome to Old News.
Well, hi, guys.
So excited to actually
see you because I can see you on this Zoom call that we may post later, right? But
yes.
So good to see your faces and so good to hear from you guys again. And I love that you're still working together after all these years.
Well, we thought it was time to dust off the microphones. Obviously, I can't talk. I just got back from my daughter's wedding. We were in Florida for a week, wedding festivities, and now I'm like, blah, 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 blah. So forgive me if I can't spit out a sentence, but it's really good to see you.
You know, old habits are hard to break, Rena, because once you start working with somebody, you never stop. You just have to keep calling them and asking them questions, and you hire each other over the years. It's a bad habit. And we were talking, you emailed before when we were setting this up, and I had forgotten that you and I, and how many other people ran that marathon with us?
Mm,
I feel like there might have been one other person, or was it just you and I? No, Ryan. Did Ryan run that with us?
Was that the one in the Fox Cities, or was it Chicago?
No, it was Fox Cities, and then Ryan and I ran Chicago together. But I don't remember you being at that one. Did you run that one with us?
I ran Chicago too. That was the worst marathon I've ever done. I had the worst stomach ache that day.
Oh no.
It was one of those, oh gosh, where's the next potty stop?
That's not good.
Oh, bummer.
I seem to remember you ran that one. I think we were there at this, we didn't run together, but I seem to remember you killed that one. You really ran that one well.
I don't know if I killed it or not. Well, Fox Cities was my first marathon, and it took me 4 hours and 45 minutes.
Yep.
And I didn't know anything about running a marathon, and so I didn't eat any of the things along the way, the sugar or anything like that, and I crashed hard. So I did just the opposite at Chicago, and I ran it in 4:01.
Whoa.
And you'd have thought I lost the lottery because I was so upset that I didn't sub 3 or sub 4.
Yeah.
So I was just bummed and determined to get under 4 hours, and then I fractured my hip.
Oh. No way.
Yeah.
So you never did another marathon after that?
Never did another marathon after that.
Yeah.
Lucky. I tried to 10 years later, and then I fractured the other hip. So I was like,
Oh my gosh, that's crazy. All right, swimming for you, that's a little friendlier, right?
I guess, yeah. I'll have to pick up something a little less impact.
Yeah, I think so.
We'll get to your work life in a minute, but I want to keep talking about running. Do you still run, though, even though your hips, you've had,
you know,
long ones? But
I did run up until about 2 or 3 years ago. So I mostly ran. I've done like the Twin Cities 10 mile. I've done other like half marathons, but I never ran a full marathon again. But I would always just run because that was, like, to me, it was like the only thing I did for me. It was like my time, my quiet time.
Yeah.
And so I did keep doing that. And then I finally got to a point where you get to an age as a woman and they're like, hey, maybe switch to strength training because that's going to help you more than running all those miles. And so that's what I did. So I haven't really run too much since then.
Gotcha.
I hear that a lot from my doctor too. You might want to mix in some strength training every now and then.
Yeah.
You're still running?
My wife and I, we still run, but not that much. And I mean, it's like 4 or 5 miles 4 times a week. So
that's a lot. That's good.
Yeah. But, you know, I need to do more muscle training.
And then your arm disappeared because of our background.
No, that was really my arm.
You've got to create an arm. Yeah.
Well, why don't you start her off with your first question, Carrie?
Well, I want to go way back in the Wayback Machine, and we knew you in Madison. Is that where you started, or where were you prior to Madison?
I will tell you that in just one second. I want to know the rules here. I have lots of questions too. Am I allowed to ask anything?
Sure. There's no rules here.
Okay. All right. No, I didn't start in Madison. I started in my hometown, which was Youngstown, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And I started off as a news producer, you know, the people that are behind the scenes and they're writing the stories that the newscasters present. And so I did that for a while and I thought, this is boring. And I'm stuck in the building all day. And so on the weekends, I would go out with the reporters and I got myself a resume tape together. And then I went out to Dubuque, Iowa. And then from Dubuque, I went to Madison before Minneapolis.
Yeah, you've had quite a career. Now, where did you go to school?
Youngstown State University.
Uh-huh.
Home of the Fighting Penguins.
The Penguins, that's right. The Fighting Penguins.
Yeah. Fighting Penguins. And were you a broadcast major, journalism major?
No, in fact, I was, I double majored in business and communications.
Oh.
And I was super shy, like ridiculously shy. So if I had to take any classes, I took radio. And then I had, oh my gosh, I almost said Tom Brokaw. I had, oh my gosh, the main anchor at WKBN for 150, Tom Holden.
Oh.
I had him as a professor.
Really?
And he convinced me to try out for the segment where they had college kids come in and they would write an editorial and then it would air at like 3 o'clock in the morning. And so I did that and I got it. And then I wrote something that the NRA, local chapter of the NRA, called and complained about, and the station pulled it. I wrote something being opposed to a concealed carry law and they pulled it. And I was like, wait a minute. Power to the people. You got to give the voice to the other people who don't have a voice. And so then I got an internship in the newsroom and the rest is history.
Oh my gosh. That's interesting.
So was Tom kind of your inspiration then to, or kind of a mentor to you, or were you already, what kind of kicked you into the news business first of all?
I think just him pressuring me to do it, because I would have never tried out for the segment on my own ever in a million years. And I still remember, like, I called on the last day, like, can I still sign up for this? You know, and they were like, yeah. So I think that just him pushing from the background was probably something that gave me the confidence to even give it a shot.
Yeah.
And then I've always just been like a real hard worker. And so I would go to school at night. I would produce the newscast during the day, go to school at night, and then on the weekends come in and go out with the reporters. And I just found my passion for telling stories and meeting people and learning new things every day. And that just, like, that gave me energy. And, you know, like all the people that you meet is just amazing over all these years and all of the different stories. And you show up at times that are bad for people, the worst times in their lives, or you show up sometimes the best time of their life. So it's an honor and a privilege that people let you tell their story, right? I mean, like, no one, they don't know me. And so what an honor, what a privilege to be trusted to tell someone's story to the public. That's still kept me going all these years. I don't know how many years it's been now, 196 maybe.
You look good. You look good.
Yeah, really. Haven't aged today.
Botox.
So you went from Youngstown then to Dubuque, and were you a reporter in Dubuque, or were you a reporter anchor, or were you everything?
I was what they call a one-man band. Yep. So I had to shoot everything myself and edit and all that. I didn't last long there. I was only there 10 months. It was a rough go there in Dubuque.
You got a little tired of being alone for all of that?
Yeah, it was. One-person band. Yeah, and I did that in Madison, too, for a little while. I was a Rock County reporter.
I remember that.
That's right. I couldn't remember.
Rock County Rena is what Tony used to call me. Tony Gallagher.
Rock County Rena.
And he is still here in Madison, so you probably know that. Yeah.
What a gem.
Amazing. I know. We'll have to catch up with him one of these days, too.
Go ahead, Carrie.
Well, I was going to say, we talked to Lisa Fielding. You did some stuff for Fox, too, didn't you?
Yeah, we were a duopoly for a while there. So me and I believe Shannon Payette anchored the, like, Friday night newscast or something. Mm-hmm. That was an interesting time, too, when they, you know, the newscast would end and they'd have to, like, run the cameras over to the other studio to start the 10 o'clock. So it was kind of an interesting combo there.
Yeah.
And they still do that, do they?
Well, they're at a new station now.
Yeah. Fox is done in conjunction with the CBS affiliate here now, WIC. So,
and if you don't know what we're talking about, you should go back, listen to the Lisa Fielding interview, and then we explain the relationship with Fox and WKOW. That's a little aside.
She was the groundbreaker.
yeah.
So I was a one-man band, too, for a while, and I didn't last that long as a one-man band either, but... Wouldn't you say, for other people who might be considered, and now everybody's kind of a one-man band or one person band, I'm guessing. Mm-hmm. But it was really a good way to learn how to put a story together and a good way to learn how to be a journalist, I think, at least a broadcast journalist at the time, don't you think?
I absolutely think that. We call them at our station MSJs, multi-skilled journalists now is what they're called. So even a Market 15, that's kind of the gig right now, is people that are trained to do it all, right? And I think they're training most kids coming out of college, young adults, I should say, coming out of college, to do the same thing. Hmm. And effectively, we've kind of killed off photojournalists in this business, because if you want to be in TV, you kind of have to do it all, right? There are very few people that are coming up through the ranks anymore that are just photojournalists or just reporters. Everyone kind of has to do it all to get hired anywhere anymore. Like I said, even here, Market 15, you'd think that it would be different. And I don't want to discourage any of the kiddos out there, because still, after all these years, I could not be more passionate about what I do. And I feel blessed that every day that I enjoy what I do. But yeah, I think that you're right, Dan. having the skill of knowing what your partner is doing as a photographer, if you move on from that,
mm-hmm.
knowing what is needed and necessary, being able to communicate what you need to them because you understand what their job is, and them vice versa, being able to understand what you need or what you're going to write to. Like, you know, how often would you get back with a photographer and you wanted to write something, but they didn't shoot what you needed? Mm. So those skills of knowing what each other need in the field is truly important. And I go even one step further, because I, and you guys know from working in the business all these years, we have these producers that have never been out in the field and they have no concept of what it takes to get something done. And so I think producers should be forced to go out in the field and learn what reporters and photographers do on a daily basis, and vice versa. We should be pushed into the world of directors and, you know, that kind of technical staff, so that we understand the things that they're facing as well. I think the best, mm-hmm. better you know everyone's job around you, the better you all are together. And I always say news is a team sport. I can't just go out there and read the teleprompter and the news gets on the air, right? Mm-hmm. Someone had to edit all that video. Someone had to shoot it. Someone has to be in the control room. Someone has to make sure that there are signals going out over the air, you know, like all those things. It takes a whole group of people. So it really is a team sport.
That really surprises me to hear that there's so many one person bands now, or the new initials that you said.
MSJ.
MSJ. OPB. I have that in my head from college. Though I will, can I share one story of me being the one person band?
Yeah.
I did a whole story in college for our, it was a class, and then we produced the news and put on the news every week. I did a whole story when I was shooting, reporting, that every time I turned on the camera, I turned it off. And then every time I thought out, you know, vice versa. So every one of my interviews was like, hey, can I talk to you for a second? Then off for the whole interview. And then I'd turn it back on to hear, thank you so much. So that was really fun to piece together. It was just terrible videography and horrible interviews.
That's a great story. What do you mean?
Thank you. Yeah.
I used to, I was the Upper Peninsula bureau chief for my first job, kind of, wow. which is a great way of saying one man band. And my first mm-hmm. interviews were always done like this. Like I'd shoot them and they'd be like this, you know, you'd have all this headroom over here.
So if you're just listening and you can't see Dan, it's just like a tiny head at the bottom of the screen and tons of headroom up top.
And they'd be green too. yeah. Did you ever have one of those stories? I had a story like this, Rena, and you could tell us if you had, like when I was an MMJ or a one person band back in the day, I was up in the Upper Peninsula and I had my little bureau office in Escanaba, Michigan. And then I'd have to drive like 4 hours to the Keweenaw Peninsula up in the very top of the Upper Peninsula. And I was going to go do this great story. There was a ship that was wrecked off the beach up there. And I was going to do this great story. And I got all the way up there and I looked in the back of my car. I had the news cruiser and my camera was back at my office.
Oh, no.
So I have like this Coast Guard guy waiting there to do an interview with me and take me out into the water. And I looked into my car trunk and I was like, uh-oh, my camera's not there. I didn't say this out loud. And then I like pretended to like to get a page on my pager. And I said, oh, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to turn around and go back. I just got a page. We have some big news story happening.
Oh, no.
I did come clean to him later because I had to go back up and do it. So I drove all the way back home and then had to reset that story back up. But
that's awful. Yeah. Well, and if that happened today, we have cell phones. I mean, you could do a whole story on your cell phone.
Right, exactly. Now you can just shoot it on yourself. Did you ever have something like that when you were doing it on your own?
Oh, my gosh. All the time. And
yeah.
You know, when I was in Madison, I was the Rock County Bureau, but we didn't have an actual bureau. So morning meeting every day, I would literally get in my Subaru Forester and drive down to Rock County to whatever the story was. And this is like, time has passed. So like they can't get in trouble for it. But the things that I would do were so unsafe. I would drive down, shoot my story, but then I had to drive all the way back to edit. So I would drive with my hand on the steering wheel and the notebook there. And I would drive with the camera and the passenger seat and I would hit play and stop, and I would write time codes down and beginning and ending while I was driving, because there's no way I would have ever made slot if I had to wait till I got all the way back to the station. So
Wow.
Yeah, there's a million stories like that. I remember being out covering a story, and I don't even remember where it was, but there was these houses along like a creek or some sort of waterway, and the water level had gone so far down that basically they just had mud in their backyards. Mm. And it was like dropping the price of their homes. And so I had to go down there and shoot it. I was by myself. And so I'm this girl, and I'm, you know, as a woman, you're also dressed kind of, you have to be dressed kind of nice because you mm-hmm. also have to be on TV, but you also have to be outside shooting the story. And so I'm walking in this area, and this car with two guys in it is following me.
Oh boy.
So like, then I start to panic, and I'm, you know, trying to get out of there. And so I, you know, and then I lost a shoe in the mud. And then I get in my car, and we didn't have cell phones then. So I had to like drive somewhere to go call back to the station. And the news director said, "Well, do you have enough to put the story together?" I was like, I was fearing for my life. And you want to know if I had enough to put the story together? That person shall remain nameless.
Yeah.
The newscast is all that matters.
Yes, exactly.
Get it on the air. I think what you said, though, too, about the teamwork, and Carrie and I have talked about this over the years. You know, one of the best things about working in television news, mm-hmm. and I'm sure it's probably still that way, is the team. Like, we were fortunate, Carrie and I, because we worked in the mornings, and we were kind of a self-contained news apparatus, really.
Totally.
You know, people kind of left us alone for the most part. So we were lucky. You know, we did our thing. We put the newscast on, and we had a great time doing it. Mm-hmm. And that was probably the best time, at least we've said this, the best time we ever had in the news business.
It was great. It was like we were a family, you know?
Yeah. And we were lucky enough every now and then you would, unfortunately for you, you'd have to come and help us out. You might fill in for one of us or something like that. So I remember a couple of those times, but that was probably killer for you because, you know, you're working a regular shift and then you got to get up and do a morning shift. And didn't you do a morning shift up in Minneapolis too for a while?
Yeah. When I came here, I was on mornings for about 3 years. This is not a lie. And I don't know what happened to me. Maybe it's childhood trauma. I have so little memory of anything in my life. So I don't even remember like coming into the morning show. Like I don't remember that. But here, yeah, that shift's hard. I don't know how long you guys did it. How long did you do that for?
Well, Four. When did we start the morning show? 96?
Yeah, 96.
96 or 97. And then I left in 2001.
Yeah. Yeah.
I must have left shortly after you then, Carrie, because I left early 2002.
Mm. And that's when you went straight to Milwaukee from there. And did you report and anchor in Milwaukee?
Yeah. So I was a weekend anchor there and then and nightside reporter. So most of my career was nightside. When I got to Care, I did overnights. And then shortly after I got there, the female weekend anchor left. So they put me on half mornings, half weekend nights.
Oh, that's a fun schedule.
Yeah. So after Sunday night football, you'd get off at, you know, 11:30. And then, you know, I'd have to be back in on Wednesday at 2 a.m. So it's like you barely even got 48 hours off, you know. So it's, that was rough too. That's the thing about news. It's like, and I don't know if people are willing to do that anymore. Do you think that people are willing to work nights, weekends, overnights, holidays? I mean, like, I feel like it's changed.
I don't know. You're still in the business.
Yeah.
We're
called old news for a reason.
Yeah.
Carrie, I have to say this. I have one vivid memory of you because you're just cute as a button. And I remember one time on air, instead of saying Paul Bunyan's
act, yes,
you said Paul Bunyan's.
Please. It's a podcast. We can say it. I said ass. I said Paul Bunyan's ass. And then the giggles ensued.
Oh, gosh. And again, I don't remember much of anything, but I just remember because you were like pure as snow. Like, that's how I felt about you. I was just like, you're just the cutest, sweetest thing. And like, the embarrassment in your face is like something I will never forget. It was very, very cute.
You know what was amazing about that whole thing? Well, actually, I was proud of Dan and me for keeping it together because we did tend to get the church giggles sometimes, you know, when you just should not be laughing. And then we'd be like,
and you know, sleep deprivation.
Oh,
help.
See, yeah, big time. So then it's like we couldn't get started or we wouldn't be able to stop. But we kind of had a, you know, a few sounds come out when I said that. I did correct it, and somehow we moved on. But we got all these emails about it, but they were so nice. And they said, oh my gosh, you just made my day. That was so funny. And thank you for handling that like such a class act. I mean, like countless emails. I still have a bunch of them. And so I thought, it's really nice that the audience received my error and, you know, giving me a little grace.
Yeah, that's, you know, most people are pretty kind about that sort of thing. And then there's the viewers that aren't so kind.
Right. Well, and now with social, we didn't have that total immediacy of the social media. Now you just get peppered probably all the time.
Yeah. You know what? I think also another change when social media first came out. Yes, that was the case. Mm-hmm. I think so few people actually sit down and watch a traditional newscast anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, back when we were in Madison, and I know you guys are still there, but back when we were working at WKBN or WKBN at WKOW, too many call letters in my life.
Yeah, really. So
to keep track. Like alphabet soup in your brain. Yep.
Right. Yeah. I think that there was far fewer options for people to get their news. And so far more people were watching and paying attention. The audience is so scattered and split these days that I don't think as many people, you know, care or notice those sorts of things anymore. I get far fewer emails about my clothes these days or tweets or texts. So
people don't
That's
care
my anymore. Litmus test.
Yeah, so, really.
So now you're pushing a lot out in different platforms, obviously. And are you part of doing that, or are you still just kind of doing, you know, anchoring a traditional newscast and then reporting, or how does it work for you now?
So in the 18 years that I've been at Care 11, my role has changed quite a bit. Currently, I'm anchoring a traditional 4 o'clock newscast.
Okay.
I do the 5 o'clock every other week. I know that sounds really weird, but it was just something that came out of COVID. And then I work on our special projects unit. So basically I'm doing bigger pieces for the 10 o'clock for book, for, you know, or even out of book, there's longer form stories that run in our 10 o'clock newscast. So that's kind of where I am right now. I'm one of the, like, I, you know, when you get old, you cross over to the other side. Like, I remember somebody had to go out and shoot a story with somebody. He was like, I didn't know you went out and shot stories. I was like, what? How new are you? Yes, this is what I've been doing my whole life, but thanks.
Oh my gosh. And well, when you say book, do you mean sweeps?
Yeah, ratings periods.
Ratings
yeah.
period. Okay.
Well, and it's good to hear you still are reporting, because you're right. There's kind of this impression, I think, that sometimes once people get past a certain age, they're not going out into the field and doing things anymore. But you're a journalist, right? And that's what you do. So what is your favorite type of story to do? What kind of, do you have a favorite, you know, is it hard news? Is it feature news? Is it, you know, those personal people stories?
I like personal people stories, but I also like stories that where people are learning something, like, mm-hmm. to me, because then I get to learn something too. And you guys know, you remember, it's like, you have to make yourself like a mini expert on something in 8 hours. Mm-hmm. And then you have to make it make sense in a minute and a half to someone else at home. Right. And that to me is just that challenge. And the fact that you get to learn something and then teach someone else something, maybe it makes them safer. Maybe it saves them money. Maybe it's just, you know, about a topic that they haven't heard of before. So, those are kind of my favorite stories, the stories that you find by accident. Like I went out to do a story about a mosque and a Western church that joined forces to do a blood drive on 9/11. It was just going to be a quick VOSAT. And mm-hmm. I asked to use the restroom and the woman said, it's down past the teen food shelf. And I was like, a teen food shelf, why is that any different? And she said, well, they can come in here and they can get food to take back to wherever they're staying so they don't have to trade their bodies for shelter.
Oh, wow.
And it was like a gut punch. I was like, yeah. I go home to my nice house in the suburbs and there's teenagers out there that are giving themselves to someone else just so they have a safe place to sleep at night. And so we did the story about this rise in homeless teens in the metro area and the fact that there's so few beds for them. There's just, they kind of fall through the cracks, right? They're too old to go to a family shelter anymore, but they're kind of too young to be in an adult shelter. A lot of them ride the bus all night long. They, you know, sleep in parks. They bed hop from, you know, friend to friend to friend until their family kicks them out, you know? And then the reasons behind why some of those kids become homeless is, you know, it's just always like shocking to me. And so those kinds of things, when you find something out, you feel like you're uncovering something that may be able to help change the situation.
Mm-hmm.
I love those kinds of things. And mm-hmm. Recently I did a story about menopause, right? Because I'm like, mm-hmm. why does no one talk about this? Like, we talk about babies, we talk about periods, we talk about all the stuff that women go through, except right. when you get to a certain age, we're like, yeah, shh.
Yeah.
I'm not going to tell you about this.
Right.
My wife talks about menopause all the time.
So I just like stuff like that where I feel like you can teach somebody something or break mm-hmm. a barrier. Like, no, it's okay for us to talk about this. We're going to talk mm-hmm. about it. You know? I like those sorts of things.
Well, you were in Minneapolis during so many difficult years, COVID, George Floyd, the riots that followed. What was that like?
And a lot of COVID was during that time too. So right, like right. you had the double scares, right?
Right?
Where you're afraid to be around people, but also you're covering riots. The city was burning.
Mm-hmm.
Like I remember going in to do the Saturday morning show one day and they took a live shot of the city and there was just plumes of smoke in different places. And it was just like, what is happening? Felt like things that you don't see in the United States, right? You know,
yeah.
you're like, wow, like our city is burning. That was a tough time and the tensions were really high. And I remember feeling guilty because a lot of that I was in the building at the news anchor desk because we were taking 12-hour shifts, you know, and then, you know, you'd do 12 on, 12 off, and then, you know, just trading out. So the reporters were out in the field and they were getting tear gassed. And, you know, one of our photographers got punched in the face. Like it was dangerous for them. And I felt guilty about that. And this city, I just still don't think has bounced back. I really don't.
Hmm.
It's unfortunate, but you know, we also had the bridge collapse all those years ago too. There's been lots of big news out of the Twin Cities.
Yeah.
I have heard that too, from some folks I know who live up in the Minneapolis, St. Paul area that, and again, it's a wonderful area. Mm-hmm. I've always loved to go up there. It's, you know, it's great culture. But it seems like it's still trying to bounce back, and keeping our fingers crossed, I guess. And you live there, so.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you know, there are bright spots, but I would argue that it's still trying to rise. Hmm. Still trying to rise.
Well, any thoughts on what that will take? What will it take to get back?
That's a really good question. And, you know, we also, it's not a very diverse place here. And I think maybe unwelcoming to people of color. And I've heard that from my coworkers who are of color, that it's a hard place. And I found it myself as a white woman. It's hard to get to know people in this community. And I think it's just going to take a shift in, maybe it's a younger generation coming up and being more accepting and doing right by other humans, regardless of the color of their skin. I think it's going to take people who deeply care about the city to stay and, you know, dig their heels in and do what's right. You know, Detroit had the same issue too many years ago, where it took people who really, really cared about the health of that city to bring it back to life. And I think that, you know, we're going to have that here too. We're going to need people who are passionate about it to really dig in. And things are cyclical too, right? Like I remember when I came here, certain parts of the community were, you know, this part's the favorite part right now, or it's the darling of the Twin Cities right now, you know, and since I've been here, the downtown area has gone in and out of favor. People feel safe or don't feel safe. And I think some of that just changes with time anyway, right?
Mm-hmm.
People move into the city and then they move out to the suburbs. Then they move into the city and then they move out to the suburbs.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of that too is just time will heal.
Mm.
Let's hope so.
Yeah.
I've got something. We always, we have this thing that I started, right, Carrie?
Yes, you did.
It's called, I call it First, Worst, and Thirst. So we've already talked about your first job in the news business. And it could be, you could give us a worst. It doesn't have to be your worst job, but it could be maybe one of the worst stories you remember ever doing, or maybe the worst job you had when you were a kid. I don't care. And then something you might still thirst for, you know, something you still want to do in your life or in your career. Think about that for a second. Do you have a worst that pops to your head right away?
have a couple of worsts.
Yeah.
Dubuque was a worst for me. That was really hard. But I learned a lot from it too. So I shouldn't say, I don't discount the experience. I wouldn't go back and change it, but it was very hard. The bridge collapse and George Floyd would probably be two other ones that the bridge collapse just went on forever. It was like every day for like 2 years. There was like never a day where there wasn't a story about the bridge collapse. And not to take away from the tragedy, but some of what I enjoy about what we do is every day is different. Every day is new. Every day is exciting. And it became not new and not exciting. And I was like, I don't know if I could do another story about it. and then obviously just George Floyd, because it was during COVID, all the racial tensions in our community, the fact that everything was felt so unsettled. So that was a tough time too. I have a worst newscast. Actually, I have two worst newscasts. One of them happened at KOW. Do you remember when we got new equipment and we went on air and the sound wasn't working? So we started over the newscast again. Same thing, got about four or five stories in, no sound. Started over a third time, still not working. And then they put a crawl at the bottom that says, "Please stand by. We are experiencing technical difficulties."
Oh, no.
I had people from the other stations calling me up in the newsroom, like, "Can we take you out for a drink? That was painful." And then I had a newscast here in the Twin Cities where none of the video was attached. And so we went on the air and there was, the teleprompter wasn't working. I had paper scripts and the producer's telling me to go to like A16 and I'm standing and I'm trying to thumb through papers. And like,
oh, no.
Flop sweating. Like I just, and what I should have done is say, "We'll be right back." But I didn't. I just on and it was, that was, I still have nightmares about that night.
I was going to say, that is the stuff nightmares are made of. And gosh. I still have nightmares about the, like, we're going on air. I have nothing. I can't get to the room. I mean, I haven't been out of the business in that respect. I mean, I do something much more calm now here in Pittsburgh, but that's like, we pre-tape, we can start over. There's no stress. And it's like, I still have nightmares about that.
You just described our entire morning show, Rena.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, really. Oh, I know.
Carrie, you mentioned Pittsburgh?
Yes, I'm in Pittsburgh. Every time I drive and I see Youngstown, I think of you. I was like, I always go, "Hi, Rena."
Oh, so how did you end up there?
So my husband, 10 years ago, he moved from, it was the same company, but he moved from working in the district to going to the corporate office. So we picked up from Illinois where we were 12 years and then we moved to Pittsburgh.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we love it. It's a great city.
Another city that has also managed to turn itself around its image, mm-hmm. It's actually like a destination now. I think, maybe people don't know that or think that, but
oh yeah,
I think they've done a fantastic job of
it's fabulous. And I mean, it used to be the rivers were so polluted and, really back in the day. I'm a hospice volunteer and the fella that I visit tells incredible stories of, going outside and you're clothes are just black from the smog, all the pollution. It'd be pitch black at noon and you'd have to change your shirt because it was such a mess. But now it's beautiful. But the jail is actually built on the river because waterfront was such a, thumbs down. It was so dirty that the jail is built right on the water. So it's like they've got the best view in the whole area.
Oh, isn't that
football stick? Isn't the football stadium still on the river too?
Oh yeah. It's very cool. Yeah.
That's my limited knowledge of Pittsburgh is the Pittsburgh Steelers. And when I was a kid, we'd collect those Pittsburgh Steeler football beer cans, because the Steelers were like the best football team in the world back when I was young, want to do the math, you know how old I am. but Pittsburgh's a cool city that we've driven through it a couple of times. It's cool to, visit. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't want to live there with you, though.
Oh, well, I'm sure your wife wouldn't appreciate that either.
No, you're
that'd
right.
That'd get awkward.
You're still in Madison. Nor would Aaron.
Yeah.
What's that?
You're still in Madison?
I live in Sun Prairie, just outside of Madison. So, yeah. We've been here since 1993 now. So, some people just never leave Reno. We just stay.
I feel like that's me here, so I get it.
Yeah.
By the way, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, we're the opposite. I mean, it's kind of like we moved into Sun Prairie, which is a little suburb of Madison, and it was about 12,000 people or so. And I mean, I grew up here too, so it was like 7,000 when I was a kid. And then we moved back, it was about 12,000. And now we're almost 40,000 people here.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy.
It kind of shows you how, you know, communities, especially in the Dane County, which is the county that Madison sits in, for people who might not know that, it's still a very popular area. People like to live in this area, and it's a great place to live. So it's hard to leave here. And we had our kids here, you know.
But that changes everything too. Once you have kids, it's kind of like there's a certain age where you're just like, you can't move. It's not, it's impossible to move at this point.
Yeah. Right. You got kids in school.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. Difficult for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm on the other end of you guys where while I am the same age, I have a 7-year-old where you guys have kids that are off married.
And we got to see her and she's adorable before we went on.
I was a late bloomer. So apparently,
hey, so we're all on different schedules.
Is she a second grader?
She's a first grader.
First grader. Okay.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. I always say I squeaked her in under the deadline.
Good job. Yes. Well worth it.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
So do you still have something in your career that or your life that you really want to do that you haven't done yet, Rena?
Ironically, I'm clearly not a sports reporter, but I have been able to, like, I was able to travel to London to cover the Vikings playing there. I've had the opportunity to go to 2 Super Bowls. I had the chance to interview Reggie White when I lived in Madison. Some of those are some of my favorite stories. I traveled to Atlanta to interview Fran Tarkington for his old Vikings quarterback, went to 3 Super Bowls, lost all 3 of those Super Bowls. They have lost all 4 Super Bowls they've been to.
And he was also on That's Incredible when he was a young man.
Really? I loved that show.
It was one of my favorite interviews, and they let me put together a half-hour special on it just because I was so fascinated by him, and like I love football so much. And so there's lots of sports things that I'd still be interested in covering. And I know that sounds weird, but I really enjoy that. I don't know why. I love the camaraderie of sports. Maybe I feel like it's the same thing. It's a team sort of aspect. And growing up in Youngstown, you're either a Browns fan or a Steelers fan. And so I just grew up in a heavily football community. Mm-hmm. So some of those milestones, like being able to cover maybe the Vikings in a Super Bowl or the God bless the Browns in a Super Bowl. those would be some of my, some of the things that I would still like to do, at least in my career. Otherwise, I feel like I've had an opportunity to do, you know, a lot of things. I mean, I've been doing this now, 26 years, maybe 27. I don't know anymore. I don't remember. I started in 1995. Yep. I don't do math.
That's almost, when I started as well. 30.
Yeah. Journalists don't do math. Dan, really long enough that you can do math.
Would you walk us through a day in the life of Rena? And like, what time do you go in? What does your day look like? Is there a big news meeting that you're part of, or how does it all work?
I don't normally go to the editorial meetings anymore just because I don't do daily news. So like tomorrow morning I'll go in. I've got 2 interviews set up for a story that I'm doing about artificial intelligence and its impact on the art world. So because you know that is affecting everything right now. Yeah. And so those 2 things will be earlier in the day. And then I come back and I have to get ready to anchor the 4 and the 5 o'clock newscast. Sometimes I do a radio show. Usually on Wednesdays, I do one of the radio shows in town. I go on for a segment. So that'll happen tomorrow too. That's about it though. And then when the newscast is done, I get to go home. And then the next day I'll be logging and writing that story, you know, that I shot, or at least trying to get it done, or see if I need any more interviews, or what kind of B-roll do we still need for it. And then working with the producer of the unit to figure out how to make that happen, because there's so many of us that need to get stuff done.
Sounds like you're in a sweet spot right now of doing stories that can be more developed. It's not so frantic of the daily news, and then you're still anchoring. Sounds pretty awesome.
Yeah, and I don't take that for granted. You know, mm-hmm. I remember exactly what it was like to be out there shooting my own video. And so I constantly advocate for our MSJs because I just think about how much more work they're doing and how much less they likely get paid. Mm. And I don't take that situation for granted, you know. And I hope that those people know that at some point the corner will turn and they will,
yeah,
they'll be the old seasoned veteran, you know, telling the new ones coming in, like, don't worry, this won't be forever.
Right.
Even though the trend is kind of like that MSJ style of journalism, you, CARE has always been known as, you know, a shooter station from what I remember.
Absolutely.
You guys have some fantastic photographers. So you must still have some pretty, pretty great photographers there that you work with.
Oh my gosh. We have honestly some of the best photographers in the world.
Hmm.
They're incredible here. And the storytelling is very important to this station. I don't know if you've ever heard of Boyd Hooper, but
yes.
So Boyd is truly my mentor. Boyd's the reason I'm still doing this for a living. He both personally and professionally, he has, saved me, because I wouldn't be here today if it weren't for him in a lot of ways, doing what I'm doing. So passionate about it, you know. And you know, he now is teaching the next generation of journalists through our company. We have a program where he still gets to do his Land of 10,000 Stories, but he's also teaching the next generation of journalists how to be journalists. And that to me is so important, because this is a career that I care very deeply about, and I feel like in some ways we're losing it, right? You know, just with all the fractured ways that people are getting their news, the silos that they're getting their news in. And so to me, it's more important than ever that we raise a group of young adults that are as passionate about what we do for a living.
Hear, hear.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
100%. And we need people to still want to be journalists.
Yeah.
Despite all of the noise and the, you know, the distraction and the false stories that go on about journalists, there's still people out there doing some really damn good work.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good to hear you say that. And I want to tell you, Boyd, what you talked about being an intern, my first job in TV news was as a weekend assignment editor in Milwaukee at WITI, where you worked. And Boyd was a reporter. He was the weekend reporter there. And I would loved to go out with Boyd.
Mm-hmm.
Because I did like what you did. I'd do my job, and then on the weekend I'd come in and shadow people. He was the best, best. And I've never seen a guy put together stories better than Boyd Hooper, other than you, Rena. But
no, not even close. And you know what? He's just as great of a journalist as he is. He's an even better human.
Absolutely.
There's no ego. There is nothing but kindness and a generous soul that's down beneath there. And I don't know if you guys know, but he's been fairly sick. He's gone through cancer, and he's doing well now, not in remission, but doing well. And so any listeners out there who know him and want to send a few prayers his way, you know, that would be amazing.
Mm-hmm. Good. I was glad to hear you say he's still, you know, still mentoring people and things like that, because I knew he had been sick. So it's good to hear.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Rena, anything else you want to yell out there at folks before we leave? I mean, I agree. It's good to have people like you out there inspiring journalists too, you know.
Well, enough about me. I didn't get a chance to do my homework. So, Dan, tell me what you're doing right now. What is life like in Sun Prairie?
He's life in theater. He loves the theater. Right. He's in two shows.
Theater is my passion, really.
It is. He's got two shows happening right now.
Yeah, what? I do theater for fun. My job now is I sell real estate, Rena. But I also
wanted to do that.
Have you? Well,
Dan, you can mentor Rena.
There you go. I would mentor you in real estate. There's about 5 million of us out here. So but honestly, my passion is I still follow journalism. I do love to do theater, and I still do some voiceover work. I do some talent work once in a while too. And I had a production company for about 16 years,
with all people you know, Rena.
Yeah, with Greg Sheevy and Sandy Kowal, yeah, who are old WKOWers. And so we did a lot of great stuff. We did some documentaries over the years. So I still love that idea, too, of putting together visual stories. So thanks for asking.
Yes, of course.
And I'm a grandpa, too. So
yay!
I am a grandpa. Out of town.
How many? Yep. Just one?
Well, soon to be two. Our second son and his wife have our granddaughter, Opal. She's almost two. And then they'll be having their second at the end of February. So, and it's going to be another girl. So we're
what
pretty
a joy. Excited.
Yeah, that it is.
So exciting. By the way, Boyd also just became a grandfather, and like watching him, like just yesterday we were talking and he was showing me like pictures of her, like opening her presents and like video, you know, it's just like, that is, it's, I heard it's next level. I don't know, when you become a grandparent and how those feelings just like are even bigger than you could possibly imagine. Is that true?
It is. It's crazy. You know, you hear your parents tell you that, you hear other people tell you that, but it's just, it's different. And it's like, you're just so much more free as a grandparent than you are as a parent, because as a parent, you're always worried about making sure they're doing the right thing. But as a grandparent, your job is to make sure they don't do the right thing. So
spoil them rotten.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. And Carrie, how long has the Old News podcast been going?
Brand new. This was one of my empty nester goals. So I said, I'm going to start a podcast with Dan and I'm going to start a band. And the band became a duo. So we are in the middle of launching. We're getting out there now. We're called Happy Hour. So yeah, working on that. And then I'm going to be starting a decluttering business, an organization business with my neighbor. So that's coming this year. But my first two projects got off the ground, and then we're, you know, releasing the podcast. But there's quite the film and TV and commercial and voiceover business is huge in Pittsburgh. I had no idea. So I have an agent here and they get me some fun work, sometimes go to Cleveland, and it's been a joy.
I don't want to say anything to discourage you, but you're going to be in Pittsburgh for a while, just so you know. All those things you just said are going to keep you in Pittsburgh.
Oh, I know. I have too many wonderful things and wonderful friends. I know.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
But she's still a Packer fan. So, you know.
Packers and Steelers. Share space. Okay.
All right.
Share space.
Are you still a Browns fan or are you a Vikings fan now?
I you know what? I've lived so many places that, I mean, and I always say in Wisconsin, you have to pick two of three options. You either have to be a Packers fan, you have to drink beer, or you have to eat brats, and you got to pick two out of the three or they kick you out of the state. So I was definitely a Packers fan when I lived there. I still watch them because they're rivals with the Vikings. I want the Vikings to do well because then I get to go cover that kind of stuff usually. And then the Browns, like my dear, dear Browns, like they're my true heart. So I would love to see them accomplish anything. But right now, like, I'm all in on the Lions too, because they too have had a terrible, terrible run. So yes. Anyone in the NFC North except for the Bears.
The Bears. Mm.
Yeah.
How about, are you still eating brats? That's my big question.
Well, you know, when I lived in Madison, I was a vegetarian.
I do remember that, but you're not anymore? 13.
No.
Oh, whoa.
Yes.
Right.
I saved enough cows in my 13 years of being a vegetarian.
Yeah.
Thank you for leaving some for us. Right. Yeah. That was
great. Yes.
And I have to tell you, because you told this story before about interviewing Fran Tarkenton. I am a huge Packers fan, but when I was a kid, I was a huge Vikings fan because the Vikings were great. They went to three Super Bowls and the Packers stunk, and I liked purple as a kid. And Fran Tarkenton was my hero. So I envy you. Between Fran Tarkenton and Chuck Foreman and, you know, John Gilliam and Ron Yeary and all those great old Vikings, boy, that's pretty cool. So yeah, you're always one up on us, Rena.
No. Hey, you asked me questions. I just answered.
I know.
And it was awesome hearing from you and seeing your beautiful face. And what a joy to catch up with you. Thank you for giving your time to us tonight.
Well, I'm just thrilled that you even remembered who I was. And about three quarters of the way through this, I realized I probably have my camera turned the wrong way. So I hope that doesn't mess you up.
That's the way the kids are all doing it now. You know, that's right. How they're going to watch it in their phones. So,
okay, Okay.
All good. As long as we can see you, that's all we need.
I'm just so excited to hear from you guys, and you both look amazing, and I have such fond memories, what I do remember, of you guys. So just an honor and a thrill to talk to you guys tonight.
Oh, thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Rena. Keep it up.
Thanks for tuning in to Old News with Dan and Carrie.
That's old news for now.
Join us next time. Yeah.